Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week for the first time is Jesse McKinley, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Times, a guy who we read and respect. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you here. Because this is the first time, let's get a little bit of a background on who you are. Are you related to the late President McKinley?
I'm not related to the late President McKinley, but I am related to James C. McKinley, Jr., who was also Albany Bureau Chief about 10, 15 years ago.
Is his picture up on the wall?
His picture's not there, but his name's there. And he is my older brother, so I see him all the time.
Does he give you advice? Does he tell you what to do and not to do?
He generally stays out of the way, which is probably to my detriment.
Well, is a reporter's life a hard one?
That's a tricky question. It's a great life. I mean, it's a fascinating field, you know. Politics is the gift that keeps on giving. And reportage in general is fantastic. You get to travel places, you get to meet people, you get to talk to people, and then they pay you for it, which is remarkable.
But there are frustrations, aren't there? For example, we have a governor in New York who is not particularly receptive to press inquiries. You are the New York Times, however, but you still have to wait out in the hall for these guys to show up, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, during budget season, during, you know, the end of session, I like to say that I spend a lot of time waiting in hallways for people to tell me nothing.
Exactly.
But by the same token, you know, the fact that Cuomo is kind of a, you know, somewhat of a mysterious figure is also, fascinating, right? Like, what makes this guy tick? What makes his administration tick? What does he actually believe in? What is he pushing for? What are his long-term goals?
And the answer is?
If I knew that, we could end this interview right now. But, you know, this is a guy who is a political scion. He's a guy who was basically born and bred in kind of amniotic fluid of politics, right? This is all the Andrew Cuomo knows. And so the way in which he operates, the kind of pragmatism that he employs, the strategies that he employs, the people that he employs, all of that's fascinating. And all of that is kind of, you know, this onion that you kind of keep unraveling.
But it's been a hell of a year. I mean, we've seen Silver on his way to jail, allegedly, at least for now, and Skelos on his way to jail. The two highest people in the state, we see the circle around Cuomo all being subpoenaed. This is a hell of a time to be in Albany, isn't it?
No, I would agree. I mean, I mentioned my brother Jim, who was here during Pataki, and I think during that period, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you had this sense that Albany would never change, that certain figures were entrenched, that there was no motion on any of this. And then in the last 18 months, you've seen the top two leaders in the Senate and the Assembly go down. You've seen a federal investigation launched on the governor's office, which seems to be tightening or at least, you know, circling that administration, which seemed kind of impenetrable during its first term. You've seen Mayor de Blasio begin to be probed as well. I mean, there's a lot going on right now. And I think the takeaway is that, you know, you oftentimes in Albany, I think the knock on Albany is nothing ever changes. But in the last 12, 18 months, you really see a lot of movement on that.
Now, Preet Bharara, my personal hero, has done remarkable things. I asked him a very specific question. I said, you know, have you expanded the law? He said, no, the law has always been there, and I just used it. I think it's a little of both, to be honest with you. But you're the New York Times, and I'm not. So does the New York Times have lines into powerful people that other journalists don't? When, you know, the New York Times on the phone, I would take the call.
I always take the call when the New York Times calls too, but
they sign the check.
I'll step back from that for a second. I think that actually, going back to this issue of Albany, I think actually right now in Albany, you've got an incredibly talented press corps. I think you've got organizations like Politico, which have come on the scene in the last two or three years, which have very good, very young, very energetic, very smart reporters. The TU still does a great job. Gannett does a good job. I mean, there's a lot of focus, and a lot of these people are well-sourced, and they know who to talk to, and they know where the power flows from, and they know where subpoenas land. I mean, Tom Precious at the Buffalo News is one of the best in the business. He was the guy who got his hand on the subpoena to the executive chamber when no one else knew who had been cited, who was being looked at. And that was a fantastic piece of reporting. So, yeah, the New York Times certainly has sources. Yes, we certainly have people in places that we can talk to get clarity on things. But it's also a fantastic time to be a reporter in general in Albany because there are so many good people out there.
Now, Jesse McKinley, I'm looking at Bharara. Somebody said to me the other day, you know, if the Supreme Court goes south on Bharara and Shelley and they get off, he's done. He's done. Bharara is done. I took great exception to that. I thought they were wrong.
I would take great exception with that, too. I don't think Preet is going anywhere but up, to be frank. And I think, to your earlier point, that the laws have been on the books for a while, and the Supreme Court continues to analyze them, and we'll see how that shakes out. But what Preet has done is take laws that were on the books and enforce them and pursue them and kind of bring a new vigor to looking at state government. And this is not a knock on his predecessors, but I think that it does take a certain degree of determination because a lot of these are very complicated issues. I mean, you look at that Buffalo Billion probe, you've got dozens of players, you've got dozens of donors, you've got multiple cities, you've got multiple projects, you've got questions of what is legal versus what is not legal, and it really takes a determination to kind of get into that and stick with it. It takes a determination as a journalist, but it also takes determination as a prosecutor or an investigator.
I wanted to go back, Jesse, to something you said before about the talented press corps. Now, the Times, of course, we all know this, takes people like you, young-ish, and puts you in place. And then, 10 years later, you're covering international wars and things like that. But everybody has to do, as my Aunt Ruth would say, a tour in Albany. To some degree, doesn't that hamper you in the fact that they'll know sooner or later you'll be gone?
I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, I don't think, I hope. But, I think the what's interesting about Albany is the roster of reporters that have come through Albany from the New York Times is
every famous name ever.
It's remarkable, and yeah. I'm kind of proud to be part of that, if only in a very small way. But, I think what Albany teaches you as a reporter is, once again, this kind of stick-to-itiveness and this idea that there can often be interconnections that you're not seeing. You just have to keep digging and you have to keep, kind of going through the documents and through the histories. And in some way, those sorts of talents, if you can develop those, you can take those anywhere. It is a training ground. But it's also a place that, if you can cover Albany and cover it pretty well, I think you can cover West Africa or you can cover Bombay or you can cover, China, all of which are amazingly complicated bureaucracies as well.
Talk to us a little, if you will, about the New York State Senate, one of my particular fascinations. It's been controlled by the Republicans for quite a while, with one tiny little exception lit. You have a group of disheartened or unhappy Democrats who have made their deal with the Republicans in order to keep the Republicans in power.
The IDC,
You have, I call them the traitors myself. You have a governor who clearly, I'm saying this, not Jesse, clearly wants the Republicans to stay in power and has not really, he gives lip service to the Democrats, but doesn't really, help them do what they have to do. Can you parse this whole thing for us?
Well, without editorializing, I think that you're right in that in 2014, when the governor said he was going to help the Democrats take back the Senate, that seemed to be faint praise. I mean, I don't think he really lifted much of a finger. He would argue, well, I gave them money. I offered endorsements. A lot of those endorsements came kind of very late in the race. A lot of them were kind of, if not half-hearted, at least not backed with stumping, not helping on kind of a grassroots level. And keep in mind, in 2014, he was running. So, that was an opportunity for him to really go out and not only promote himself, but promote Senate candidates. I think the next 3 months will be telling. He has once again kind of gone back to this posture. You know, when he's asked about this stuff, he always likes to say, well, this is not political season. This is, you know, the political season will come. That's silly season in the fall. Right now I'm concentrating on Hillary and blah, blah, blah. That's okay. You can say that. But I think if come September, October, he doesn't start to come out for Senate Dems, they're going to have a legitimate beef yet again that this is a guy who is the titular head of the New York State Democrats who doesn't want the state Democrats to take over the Senate. And, you know, you might get into this kind of fool me once kind of situation. You know, if he did this in 2014, you could say, oh, well, you know, there were other considerations. But if he yet again says, well, of course I want the Senate Democrats to take over, but then doesn't go out and stump for them, you know, I don't know that they will be able to take him at his word again.
Well, my impression from talking to a lot of them is they don't take him at his word right now, and therefore, you know, there won't be an Armageddon here because everybody's sort of used to it and you know, yawns. But I do want to talk to you a little bit about the way in which the national campaign is going. Mm-hmm. We have two New Yorkers running for president. Do either of those people have repercussions? You throw a stone in the water and you get these circles. Mm-hmm. Is the candidacies of either of these New Yorkers affecting the way Albany is?
I don't know if it's going to affect the way Albany is at the moment. It may affect what Albany looks like next year. I mean, the Senate Democrats, Mike Gennaris, who leads that caucus, politically at least, feels very strongly that the Trump effect is going to help them, that there's, you know, several races on Long Island where you have more moderate voters, where, you know, Trump at the top of the ticket is going to turn some people off, and that will be just enough to kind of push the Senate Dems into winning 1, 2, 3 seats on Long Island. You know, they already won that Todd Kominsky race out there in the special, and I think that gave them great hope that they're going to take back, you know, some seats that they feel, because of the demographics out on Long Island, they should rightfully own. We'll see. Now, in terms of Trump's impact on other races upstate, he could have a positive impact. You know, I was recently traveling in upstate New York and central New York and western New York, and there are a lot of Trump signs, and there are a lot of aggrieved, unhappy people that fully intend to support Donald Trump because they feel that they've been left behind. And I think for some close races in Senate districts up there, that Trump could be a net positive for him.
I'm going to make a prediction that when the smoke clears, Jesse, you're going to see the Republicans still in control of the New York State Senate. Would that surprise you?
It would not surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the sense you have of covering the ethics of the New York State Legislature? In other words, is it ever going to come to a point where really they will do something that I think would be in their own interest to clean up their act so that people could begin to believe in them again?
Well, I think if you didn't see it this year, I wouldn't hold your breath. I mean, considering the Skelos conviction, considering the Silver conviction, considering just the emphasis on this, considering how much you know, drum beating the good government groups did, considering, you know, the polls where you saw, you know, 95% of New Yorkers saying this is a big issue, we got to take care of this, considering those sorts of numbers, that they didn't get kind of substantive, you know, kind of ground shifting ethics reform through, I don't know what it would take. But that being said, I mean, the ethics issue is always interesting to cover because, you know, of course, when something explodes, when someone gets convicted or indicted, that is obviously news. But, you know, you talk to a lot of legislators, a lot of lawmakers who are on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, who come up here and they do their job and they go home and they try to represent their districts and they try to represent their constituents. And that's probably 90-95% of you know, the people who come up here.
And yet they vote for the ones who front for them, who do not allow them to say, okay, we want limits on outside income, for example.
Sure. And I think that is a legitimate argument that, you know, if in the rank and file you're like, we have to have this has to change, you have to get this through, you have to go back to the governor and say, we have to have this, then perhaps that would change. But by the same token, you know, very early on in the, you know, after the budget this year, Governor Cuomo signaled pretty definitely that there was not going to be a lot of ethics change, that maybe they would get the LLC loophole, that didn't happen, that they would get pension forfeiture, that seems to be happening, although that's still up for another session. So, you know, a certain amount of this falls on the executive as well.
Speaking of which, I want to talk to you about Jesse McKinley of the New York Times. I want to talk to you about the AG. They say up here that the AG stands for almost governor. and governors, of course, have come from that job. This is a very strange relationship, it seems to me. There was the Moreland Act. Remember that? Of course, mm-hmm. Of course, you and everybody else does. It's the single millstone around the governor's neck more than anything else. And he got the AG to deputize all the members of the Moreland Act Commission as assistant attorney general so they could go after the legislature. Then he said, it's my commission. I could do anything I want. Wait a second. What happened to the other guy?
That's a fantastic question. I mean, you know, the Moreland Commission, I think when you write the kind of summary of the Cuomo administration, whenever that is, the second Cuomo administration, I think no one is going to look kindly on that 9-month period because I think that, you know, it's going back to Schneiderman and the AG and even the members of the commission, you know, I think they thought that they were going to do what they had been tasked to do, which was investigate, you know, public corruption and try to figure out what was wrong.
And they were getting close.
And I, you know, yes, it seems as though they were at least making headway. I don't know if they were getting close, but they took their job seriously. And even as it was going on, you know, I was getting, you know, sources that were saying, you know, there seems to be a little bit of meddling here. And, we're a little bit concerned about, you know, what the executive branch is doing. And then it was shut down. And I don't think there's any good way to spin that. You know, when you set up a Moreland Commission, you give them the powers that you just articulated. And then, you know, kind of lightning bolt on, you know, a Saturday afternoon in March, right after the budget deal. Well, the Moreland Commission is done. I don't think that was what anyone on that commission intended, or most of the people on that commission intended. And I don't think it was the message that, you know, should have or could have been conveyed to the people in New York.
Now, Jesse McKinley, in the film The Graduate, which you may not have seen because you're...
Plastics. It's all about plastics.
That's right.
There you go.
You're way ahead of me. When the guy, Mr. Robinson, takes him outside and says, go into plastics. Now, in the New York State Legislature, the question is real estate. Go into real estate, because now we're seeing all these stories, many by you and others, showing that the real estate industry really does control things in terms of campaign contributions. What are you finding?
Well, I don't think it's any surprise that real estate is a huge interest in the state, and particularly, obviously, in New York City, where, you know, they have built billions, if not trillions of dollars worth of, you know, condominiums and other, you know, high-end properties in the last, you know, 10 years.
And one little quirk in the law helps you make a lot more money.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you give a lot of money. You give $5 million and get $500 million back, right, Jesse? Then that's a good investment already.
Well, to go back to the ethics issue, I mean, the LLC loophole does allow this kind of unfettered, unchecked flow of money into state politics. And once again, go back to the ethics issue, I think that for reformers, for people that take this seriously, that is just a hole that it just causes enormous problems in the political system, because it does allow money just kind of free flow through multiple LLCs into campaign coffers. You know, the contrary argument is, well, you know, if we close this, then the, you know, the labor groups will have undue sway over the, because they control the Democrats, et cetera, et al. I think, you know, you can parse this a million different ways, but I think to your point, the issue is money. You know, the issue again and again and again, from, you know, from good government groups reporting to, you know, even citizens on the ground, they recognize that money in politics is corrosive, and it upsets the, you know, the balance, and it causes questions. I don't know if in every case it's a direct quid pro quo, but it certainly raises enough questions that it undercuts people's faith in the government. And at that, at the end of the day, just that loss of faith is enough to cast a shadow, you know, and to make Albany seem yet again like this corrupt place, this cesspool where no one does anything for the public's interest, but only does it for private gain.
Shocked, I tell you. Just shocked. But I want to talk to you about Google groups. Mm-hmm. These are the good government groups who I've been watching for years. And, you know, how are they doing? I mean, I know that you quite frequently talk to one of my other heroes, Blair Horner, from NYPERG, and he's quoted a good deal. But it seems to me these are different groups with different agendas. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, yes and no. I mean, one, I think that they all are frustrated. To go back to your point before, I think they're frustrated by the lack of action on ethics. There was a press conference earlier this year where they were once again kind of beating the drum to try to get ethics reform. And without being nettlesome, I raised my hand and I said, you know, guys, you've been doing this for a while. You've got this unique political climate. You've got the support of 95% of New Yorkers. Why can't you get this done? Do you think there's something wrong with your tactics? And I think that question was taken probably the wrong way. I think they took offense. I wasn't trying to offend them, but
there was no wrong way. You were right.
Well, there is the question of, like, what would it take for these groups, which are, you know, fighting the good fight from their viewpoint to try to change government for the better. What would it take? What do you need to do differently, or what do you need to do to get these things changed, to get their agendas kind of fulfilled? And I think that is a legitimate question right now. You know, like, what will it take for those groups to get the types of reforms and changes they want? And I don't have that answer, and I think they're searching for it as well.
Well, I have it.
that does not surprise me.
I think they're not all the same. In other words, my sense of it is you get somebody like Blair Horner and his group, you know, he does a magnificent job and he doesn't shut up. Some of the other ones, I think, see themselves as more dependent on the goodwill of the people who are on their boards of trustees and directors, and they're not the same.
They are not the same. I would agree with you to that point. I don't know much about
their... In other words, I think they're gutless, some of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that one. But I will say that I think they're frustrated. I would say that frustration would probably be a fair characterization.
Very good. So what happens when they all go home and you're sitting up here in Albany? How does it change your life? I mean, they're not here that long. And when they're here, they're not really here. They come on Tuesday, they leave on Wednesday or whatever, Monday night. What do you do? You go out to eat a lot? You don't look like you're gaining a lot of weight?
No, you know, I sit on the couch eating bonbons, basically. No, I think one of the interesting things about Albany is not only that it is a political center, but it's also a regional center. In my previous incarnation, I was a national reporter out of California, and I was able to cover a lot of turf out there, you know, Nevada and Arizona and admittedly once in a while Hawaii, which was not bad. But one thing I like about Albany, one thing I like about this beat is that there's a lot of stories outside of Albany. You know, it's a big state. You know, I did a story earlier this week out of Batavia. I was kind of, I've been covering a murder case out of Potsdam, New York. Of course, the Buffalo Billion investigation gets me to Western New York a lot, you know. And it's a beautiful state, particularly during the summer. And there's a lot of stories out there. And, you know, I've kind of made it my mission in when the legislature's not in session to kind of get out there and tell some of those stories, too, because they're legitimate and they're New Yorkers, too. And the New York Times is, at the end of the day, the New York Times. You know, it is this state and that city. And I feel, you know, part of my responsibility is not only to represent and to present the news of Albany, but to, you know, to see what else is going on in the state.
Well, you're doing a terrific job. And I have to say, it's extraordinary how important the New York Times is. I get up several times during the night and I use my mobile app and I say, what have they got now? Because it's not going to be the same on the front page of the New York Times as it is on the app at night. And I have to say, you've got the dream job. And we thank you so much for being with us, Jesse McKinley. and it's just wonderful to have you here.
Thanks so much.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.